WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The first family of surfing is how the Paskowitzes were described in the New York Times. It's a family with several championship surfers, a family that founded a now-famous surfing school in California. But surfing may be the least part of what makes this family atypical. The Paskowitz family is the subject of a new documentary which opens in New York this week. A few days ago, Terry Gross spoke with John Paskowitz about his childhood and about his father, Dorian.
Dorian Paskowitz, or Doc as he's known, was a Stanford-educated, twice-divorced physician living in Hawaii in the mid-1950s when he decided to give up his conventional life and devote it to surfing. He went to Israel for a year and introduced surfing there. Then he moved back to the U.S., married, and had 9 children, 8 boys and a girl. He had a dream of a utopian family life, devoted to surfing and fostering mental and physical health by living as naturally as possible, outside of society's rigid structures. No rent, no house, no job, a strict diet, no schools for the kids. The 2 parents and 9 children lived in a 24-foot camper and drove where the spirit moved them. The new documentary about the Paskowitz family, called Surfwise, is about Doc's dream and the realities it created for his family. For 10 years, his wife was pregnant or breastfeeding without one day off. He wanted his family to live like animals in the natural world.
When my wife had my first baby, I said, look, I don't want any gorilla to do anything with its baby that you don't do with my baby. If a gorilla feeds its baby for 2 years, I want you to feed my baby at the breast for 2 years. I don't want to be upstaged by any gorilla or any chimpanzee or any newt or any gecko or any squirrel.
As you can imagine, Doc's dream had its consequences.
My dad always, he always wanted us to understand that we were no different from the great apes, which was fine if we had stayed there, but we didn't stay there. We got married, you know, and our wives didn't want to be married to an animal. Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to deal with modern life sometimes still.
Doc's dream included homeschooling his children.
I wasn't some kind of avant-garde, radical, intellectual. I just wanted my kids around me, surfing with me, and education be damned.
It may have seemed like freedom at the time, but some of Doc's children now regret being kept out of school.
You know, my dad always loves to show off the fact that he's a Stanford graduate, and it's like, what the heck kind of Stanford graduate, what the heck kind of Jew would say, I'm not sending my kids to school? I mean, I think that was completely unfair. If you were going to keep us in the camper for the rest of our lives, then that was okay. But you can't keep us uneducated and then send us off into the world and expect that there's not going to be some serious problems, you know?
The film Surfwise was directed by Doug Prey. My guest, John Paskowitz, is one of Doc's 9 children. He won the U.S. and World Longboard Championships in the late 1980s. He's worked on surf comics, surfer gear, and surf-related movies. He's a producer of Surfwise. I asked him about living with his 8 siblings and 2 parents in that 24-foot camper. Where did they all sleep?
We slept everywhere. You know, we made makeshift places to sleep. We made hammocks. We slept on the floor. We slept with each other. It was wonderful. I mean, there's nothing better than cuddling your brothers and lying around, one brother reading a comic book to the others or a book that's very exciting or all of the things that are almost Little House on the Prairie-ish, if you remember that. Were happening organically with us, reading and talking and games that we played that interacted with our surroundings and stuff like that. It was all very wholesome and fun and I don't think we ever thought of the camper as cramped. It's not till later that we look in hindsight at where we were and how we lived that the concept even of being crushed into the little camper came out. We didn't come up with it. Somebody on a INLA show or something that interviewed us said that. And then later we went, whoa, all of us living in a 24-foot camper, I guess that was hard. But back then, we didn't see it as hard.
It seems like your father really sought freedom for himself, but he was quite the disciplinarian with the children. What were his techniques for keeping discipline and for punishing the kids when he felt they were out of line?
There wasn't a lot of corporal punishment. Most of it was verbal, to just explain things to you. And then, of course, a physical quest, walking someplace or paddling your surfboard a certain distance or running to a certain location within his point of view and back within a time frame. As a little sidebar, when we were working for... my dad would get Option magazine and go and be a doctor in places where they really needed a physician and make a little money, and then would go, you know, off on a quest afterwards. And one time we went to Block Island, Rhode Island, and we got to this place, and the schoolhouse that he let us go to for the time we were there had breakfast for the kids. And I sat down and consumed 72 boxes of Kellogg's Frosted Flakes.
In one day?
In a row.
Holy cow.
In a row, without pausing.
Because you were so deprived of sugar. I mean, you weren't allowed to have any sugar.
I got so systematic opening the boxes. I actually, like, made a soundtrack to the slice, slice, open, open, bam, bam, milk. And 72 boxes later, the lady from the class that I was in calls the superintendent or the principal and says, "This poor little boy, he just ate 72 boxes of Kellogg's corn. We need to talk to their parents. Maybe they're starving these kids." So my dad was brought into the loop, and he explained that we were not permitted sugar at home, and that's probably what it was. And when I got home, he didn't punish me at all, and I was going, "Huh, I wonder what's going to happen." And later that night, he woke me up at about 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and he wanted me to walk quite a distance in the snow and the cold down in total jet black darkness to a place at the harbor, which we particularly found scary, and make a mark to prove that I'd been there, and then come back to show me, you know, what the effects of all of that sugar had done to my ability to process a goal and go on a mission, and it was definitely, I felt it. I definitely felt it, and I was scared, and it was a long, hard quest, and I fell into a lake, and it was scary, and it taught me a good lesson.
Which was what?
Which was everything in moderation. I mean, you can take cyanide in moderation.
But your father didn't do things in moderation. He was extreme.
In the sense that you're looking at it from a social point of view, he was extreme. But from the point of view that he liked to emulate, which was living extremely fit and Spartan in your existence, to be as fit and effective in everything that you do as possible. And that requires a certain amount of strictness. One, because you're living in a society where you can go into a store and just walk down the aisles and be a hunter, gatherer, farmer, all the things that, you know, took a lifetime for humans to achieve at once. You can consume massive quantities of food and really hurt yourself. And number two, if he didn't have the strictness, you would not have been able to keep the herding of the Pasquitz children together, because, like Joshua says, it's like herding cats, you know, keeping us together. And if there wasn't some type of framework of strictness, there were times that we probably wouldn't have survived. I mean, because he took us on bold quests and big surf and wild adventures. And when you were doing that, you have to behave, in some order.
You know, you were all homeschooled. You were never, at least not for any extended period of time, within the school system. And part of what your father schooled you in was surfing. Did you love surfing as much as he wanted you to?
That's a good question. Only once have I heard any of the brothers say that they did not love surfing. And that was after Moses' accident, and he was basically eviscerated by a surfboard fin at the water's edge, and had to wear a colostomy for a year, and it was a terrible accident. And afterwards, when he was recovering, he said, "I'll never surf again. I hate surfing." And he, after he did, lose the colostomy and come back to full health, thank God, he took it back. But for me personally, Words cannot describe the euphoria that surfing provides as a human. Words cannot describe the absolutely magical and romantic feeling of riding a wave, going up and down on the surface of the water, and feeling just an unlimited power under your feet, and to be in harmony with the ocean, perhaps riding along and seeing a dolphin in the face of the wave next to you, or a beautiful rainbow as the spray of the wind is offshore pluming over the back of the wave. And it's just the most beautiful, romantic, organic thing I think a human can do.
John, you've done, you know, very well professionally. You've been the head of companies and marketing, and it seems like most, if not all, of your siblings have done well. Mm-hmm. You were homeschooled by your parents, who I think by anybody's standards you'd have to say they were a little eccentric. So what was homeschooling like? Like, did you learn, in addition to learning about surfing, did you learn about literature or science and medicine? Your father's a doctor. Did you learn about math, history? Like, what was the process of the homeschooling? What kind of books did you have around?
My mother and father always had a pretty wide array of books. I think our family favorite had to be the dictionary. We would sit down and somebody would say a word and then, you know, read it out of the dictionary, and you had to give us a definition or use it in the form of a sentence. That was probably one of the funnest games. I hate to say this, but we fleeced so many libraries growing up. We tried to get the books back if we were staying in a place long enough to do that. But he would give us the information, we would read it. If you asked him why the sky was blue, he would give you a book on light. And usually the more like the college version of something. And we loved to read his medical books, and he loved to talk about family lineage and history, and he always promoted us knowing more about our family's mother side, and also my mom brought a huge aspect into it through music, through classical music, and her explanation of the stories behind some of the classical operas and arias that she had learned, and she had a tremendous voice, and she would sing stories to us and such. But there are big holes where you didn't get everything because...
What's an example of that?
Well, like, I didn't pay much attention to math, but I loved reading, and I loved music, and I loved philosophy, and I loved poetry, and I loved... So it was really sharing information and interfacing with each other pretty much, like, off the hip. There was very, very little structure.
Surfer John Paskowitz speaking with Terry Gross. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with John Paskowitz. The story of his unusual surfing family is told in the new documentary, Surfwise.
You know, we've talked a little bit about diet in your family. Your father was opposed to sugar of any sort, and you you told us a story about eating 72 mini boxes of Frosted Flakes the first time you were exposed to them. So what was the typical diet like? Because the family didn't have money either. So they had these, like, strict dietary prohibitions and no money. So what did you typically have for breakfast and dinner?
Most always for breakfast was seven-grain cereal. And my father used to go to a place in Escondido that cut rough grains. And my brothers always said it was bird seed. And it did look like bird seed. It was flax and various cut grains in big bags, or there's an oro wheat product called seven grain cereal that we would get if we couldn't find that original kind of it looks like horse feed. In fact, it might have been horse feed, because there was, like Moses says, sometimes there were sticks and twigs and branches in it sometimes, and there were, and we'd boil that up like a gruel, a big pot of gruel, and we'd sing food, glorious food, and my mom would dole it out for us in the morning. And if we were really lucky, we could have a tablespoon of corn oil on it, and we might have a banana or a piece of fruit with that if we were lucky. And then usually beans and rice would be the typical lunch and dinner, maybe a soup. My mom's excellent soup and beans and rice maker. And then we were allowed to have any kind of chili peppers or anything spicy, you know, we wanted with that. And that would probably be it. You know, if we were lucky, we could have fruit, oddly, in the middle of the day or something like that. But it was a lot of the gruel, a lot of beans and rice. And if we were rolling, we'd have maybe eggs for breakfast or with our gruel or maybe a chicken dinner on the Sabbath.
And what would happen when you were exposed, like say you saw somebody's television or you went to town and you saw things you wanted? Kids are always doing, I want. You know, mm-hmm. I want this, I want that. I saw it at a commercial. I saw it in the supermarket. I saw it in the toy store.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go through I wants? And what were the things you wanted that you couldn't have?
And before we were exposed, there were no such thing as I wants. It was more like, what can I do for you, Mom? Or what can I do for your dad? I know that sounds ridiculously like civil, but we were always anxious to do something, work on the car, paint this, fix that, create a better way of tying on the boards, a better way of dealing with the blivet bags, whatever it was. And then once we got old enough to like have sleepovers or see somebody's house and actually see towels with their names on it and like kids that had their own section in the refrigerator with Twinkies and Ho-Hos, and it was unbelievable to us. It was beyond our comprehension. And that's when we all realized we wanted sugar, we wanted fat, we wanted salt, we wanted TV, we wanted to play with little girls, we wanted to, you know, we wanted all of those things.
And what did your parents tell you about why you couldn't have it?
It wasn't so much we couldn't have it as we didn't need it. It wasn't that we didn't want
it. They told you didn't need it.
Yeah, and we really didn't. In fact, it was pretty obvious to us when we first started like having like sprees of sugar consumption or sprees of burgers or whatever it was that we, you know, would get a couple bucks. Somebody would give us a tip for taking them surfing or something, and you'd run up and buy like 4 hamburgers or 5 hamburgers and eat them all in a sitting. I remember like Abe ate 2 dozen eggs one time, just hard-boiled 2 dozen eggs and ate them. Like Cool Hand Luke. And we were like, hey. He had an anaphylactic reaction, and we were just like, "What? Why would you do that?" And he goes, "When we would always have eggs, I never got my share of the eggs. I don't know why, but Mom always passed me by with the eggs, and I just had a buck in my pocket or whatever. I went and bought 2 dozen eggs and boiled them and ate them to fill his egg need."
When you and your siblings left the family, were you still having problems learning about moderation once you were in the world and you were exposed to things that you can do in excess and you have to be careful about?
Absolutely. Moses, you know, is always worried about his weight and Nava and...
Your sister.
And my sister Nava and the rest of us all are support group for each other pretty much because nobody understands us like ourselves. We're all fighting with that. I'm very excited to get the chance to rebuild myself after this and try another poke at being a person.
What do you mean by that? Try another poke at being a person?
Oh, just that, you know, the Pasquitzes have ephemeral lives. They go and they grow and they do something, and sometimes they don't always finish what they start, or they don't follow through with it. I mean, Moses and some of the brothers that have had 9-to-5 jobs that have maintained them for years and years, I really respect. But some of us, Abraham, myself, Joshua, Salvador, you know, we've tried and failed in many things, and each thing is a learning process, and each thing prepares us better for the next thing.
Are there any of your siblings who are following your father's dream and how they're living their lives or raising their families?
Everybody in their own way copies something. Adam really wants to follow the dream, only he wants to do it in a boat, not in a camper. David follows his dream in a different way by organizing himself now physically because he sees himself getting older and he wants the longevity. Abraham is more of the philosophical dad. Everyone's got their like pros and cons. You know, I do a lot of things like my father, and we are probably, my mom says, in some ways we're the closest to each other, but I have more vices than anybody in the family, I'm sure. You know, I think Adam would be the one that I would pick out as the one individual that really wants to make the quest in his life and take his kids on that quest too.
John Pasquitz speaking with Terry Gross. His family's story is told in the documentary Surfwise.